Morning is Cambridge Decision Science v. Markman.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jill Bowman, and I'm here representing the appellants John and Ellen Markman and Markman Capital Insights. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. The trial court committed two critical errors, each of which warrants reversal of the judgment entered below. First, it entered summary judgment on a breach of contract claim despite substantial and unrebutted evidence proving the parties never mutually assented to the same contract terms. Second, the trial court entered judgment in favor of an entity that does not exist. As a non-entity, plaintiff Cambridge Decision Science, or CDS, did not possess the legal capacity to seek or obtain judicial relief.
If we agree that there was no objective manifestation of mutual intent, do we need to reach any of the other issues?
No, Your Honor, because you don't have a contract, there can't be a breach. The judgment was in error. I'll go back to that, but I think that feeds into it. Your Honor, this is a contract formation case. Under Washington law, to form a valid contract, there must be objective manifestations that the parties mutually agreed to the same material terms. The acceptance must be identical to the offer, and if it's not identical, there's no mutual agreement and no contract. In this case, there was never any acceptance that was identical to the other side's offer. When John Markman signed the draft agreement provided by Trey Thomas, he struck one of the proposed terms in the document, initialed the strikeout, and sent it back. By deleting a term, he was making a counteroffer.
Thomas did not consider that term not material?
I beg your pardon? I don't think the court can consider it not material, Your Honor.
Did the trial court consider that not material? I'm trying to understand the trial court's decision.
Your Honor, I don't understand the trial court's decision. There was no hearing. There was no evidentiary hearing. There was no oral argument. All we got was the judgment. I can't tell you anything more than what the judgment says. Thomas did not accept the counteroffer. Instead, he had further discussions with Mr. Markman and then sent emails with his own counteroffers and his statement twice that if Markman didn't accept that day to his counteroffers, there would be no agreement. Markman didn't accept that day or any day, so there was no contract formed. That didn't change. When Thomas later sent the draft agreement back to Markman, he sent it with an email saying, assuming you will do that, I'm sending back the settlement agreement with the strikeout co-initialed. But the do that was a reference to Markman's cross-checking of addresses on a customer list that had previously been provided, and Markman never performed the cross-checking and never agreed to do so.
Was that a material element of the contract?
Your Honor, I think it had to be, because Mr. Markman said he wouldn't do it. And Thomas' response was, he didn't just say fine. He said, he came back with counterproposals saying, well, if you'll do this, but if you don't, we don't have an agreement. It has to be material if both sides say, we don't have an agreement if we don't do this.
And so all the conversation back and forth related to some mechanism to verify they had accurate names and addresses.
Correct, Your Honor.
So this was something they were continuing to negotiate.
They were continuing to negotiate. They were continuing to negotiate, and so a few days later, Thomas acknowledged that there was no mutual agreement when he asked Markman if he would agree to submit the party's dispute to binding arbitration. You know, if as the trial court had held that that Thomas and Markman had already reached a final and complete agreement, there would have been no reason to suggest arbitration, and there would have been no reason for Mr. Markman to agree to arbitrate. Because this turns on the threshold question of whether a valid contract was formed, the trial court was required to consider all the relevant extrinsic evidence, oral and written, to answer that question. And it should have viewed that evidence in light most favorable to the Markmans, who were the non-moving parties. It didn't do so. Had the evidence been viewed in their favor through that lens, it was at least enough to show that there was a dispute about whether Thomas and Markman ever mutually agreed to the same terms. The trial court wrongly usurped the fact finder's role when it concluded that the parties had entered into a valid contract. The trial court's reference to the parties in the judgment brings us to the second point.
Let me go back to your first question. Are
sure.
you asking that this be remanded for trial?
Yes, Your Honor. We did not bring our own cross-summary judgment motion, so I don't think the court can actually enter any affirmative relief. I think at this point you can reverse. We may be bringing our own summary judgment motion, but we did not below. So I think that's why it has to be reversed at this point, to go back for further proceedings in the trial court. Getting back to the second point, Cambridge Decision Science never proved that it was an entity that had any legally recognized right to pursue judicial relief. But as far as we can tell, it's an unregistered trade name for Trey Thomas. But Thomas never submitted any declaration or affidavit stating that to be the case. And the record contains no evidence that Thomas or any other alleged principal of CDS authorized or is aware of this legal proceeding. This puts the Markmans in the untenable position of potentially being held liable to CDS and Thomas for the same alleged obligation. The potential for duplicative liability is one reason why entering the judgment for CDS was not harmless error. Another reason is that CDS has not established that a judgment creditor with no legal existence can ever provide a legally valid satisfaction of judgment. Because entry of judgment in favor of a non-entity was erroneous, and because there was never any contract formed that could have been breached, the judgment should be reversed, and that's what we ask.
Good morning, Your Honor. Ian Burke for the plaintiff and respondent. On the issue of the trial court's reasoning, trial court entered a finding that the parties enter a signed, completed agreement.
Well, let's talk about that, because this reminds me of first-year contracts, which for me was a long time ago. If you consider the document called settlement agreement that was sent by your client on October 15th, and it's at Clerk's Papers 175, I see a strikeout of the third numbered paragraph in that agreement. Do you agree?
Yes, there's a strikeout.
And there's also an initial in the right-hand margin of Mr. Markman, correct?
There is one version with one initial.
I'm talking about Clerk's Papers 175, which is under the record, a document that was sent to Mr. Markman on October 15th. Does that or does it not have the initials only of JDM in the right-hand margin?
There is one such document like that.
Okay, so your answer is yes, it only has JDM's initial.
Correct.
Okay. The strikeout pertains to some client list, correct?
Yes.
And that was the subject of further communication between the parties over the next period of time, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me why this strikeout, which I interpret as a counteroffer and not an acceptance of the offer propounded, why is that not evidence that there was no objective manifestation of mutual assent?
Because Thomas sent back a second version where Thomas counter-initialed that very strikeout.
Together with an insistence that there be, in fact, some agreement on the customer list, right?
Not exactly. And that's the mark, that's one note I made while counsel was presenting because I want to discuss that very point.
Okay, discuss it.
There was an abandonment of any notion of cross-checking customer lists, and the assuming you will do that email that they place all their reliance on notes that Mr. Thomas found two emails that didn't work. And the assuming you will do that.
When was the abandonment under your theory?
In that email of October 16th.
Hadn't there already been a communication that didn't accept the counteroffer before that? Weren't there other communications in between?
No, I don't think there were.
What I'm hearing you say is, we got this counteroffer, we tried to negotiate something, and once we were unsuccessful, we decided to go back and accept the strikeout. That's what the abandonment basically asserts.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, because Thomas initials the strikeout change and sends it back, and the assuming you will do that line says, hey, two emails didn't work. And he asks him not to cross-check any customer lists, but check those two emails. The law is the parties have to agree on all the material terms of the settlement. And when we're talking about two broken emails in the larger context of what's going on here.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Is the issue of the customer list material?
No.
Why not?
Number one, it was stricken and both parties initialed. Number two, Markman stated himself there was nothing to check. If he had errors, he couldn't source them. That's at Clerk Papers 182 and 180. And number three, the only thing the assumption, assuming you will do that, referred to is looking at two emails that didn't work at all, where Markman has already stated there's nothing to check.
If, in fact, we disagree with
yes.
your assertion that the customer list was not a material term, what result? You lose, right?
Well, I think you have to send it back, and I think there has
Well, we send it back with a reversal because this is a summary judgment standard that's applied, correct?
That's true.
That would
that's
make
true.
There a genuine issue of material fact regarding the existence of the settlement agreement, correct?
I think so, but what I'd say about that is then what do we try?
I guess I don't care what you try, because this is an enforcement of an alleged settlement agreement, and the issue before us is whether summary judgment was proper.
But my point is that...
Isn't that the issue before us?
Oh, yeah, I think that's the issue.
Okay.
But I think it does matter what you send back to get tried, because what they're
saying... My point is we don't have to send anything back to get tried. We can reverse, and the parties are left to whatever... they wish to present to the trial court.
That's true, but what they're saying is the problem here is there is lack of agreement over a material term.
Yes.
They didn't ask this court in this setting for an evidentiary hearing, and the cases that they rely on...
Why would you ask for an evidentiary hearing on a summary judgment motion?
Well, it was one of their arguments. I mean... Because there are cases that rely on evidentiary hearings in the context of enforcing settlement agreements. The question here is, did the parties settle?
And well, isn't there also a material question about whether this was a material element of the contract, a material term? You're telling us it wasn't.
The
counsel tells us it was. There's evidence that the parties were negotiating about this term when one party refused to accept it.
And I think
that
the evidence.
A question of fact
I don't think
about
it,
whether it's material.
I don't think it does, because I think the evidence is the other party gave up.
But they gave up too late, didn't they?
I don't.
I mean,
think
when
so.
This comes back with the initial, your client had the opportunity to say deal, but it didn't do that. It made a counter demand.
But I don't think it was a counter demand on any material issue. I think they did agree.
How do we know it's
material.
Not material if it mattered enough to your client? How do we know as a matter of law that it's not material if it mattered enough to your client to come back and attempt further negotiations on it?
Because he sent back the signed strikeout and the signed mutual release of the claim.
Well, this is not like the Uniform Commercial Code in sales, why you have an exchange between merchants of documents and you try to make an agreement. This is straight common law contracts, offer, acceptance,
yes.
objective manifestation of mutual assent. We don't have it.
I think the question is mutual assent on what issues? And I think the law is mutual assent on all material terms to settle a lawsuit.
Okay, so your argument here necessarily requires us to accept the proposition that this business about customer lists was not a material term.
The proposition that the business...
Yes or no?
No.
Okay, explain that.
Because... The assuming you will do that refer to checking two emails, not cross-checking an entire customer list.
Okay.
That's the reason, Your Honor. Unless the court has other questions, we would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Three minor points, Your Honors. First of all, the document, there was no abandonment. The evidence is, the record is clear that he sent it back when he co-initialed with a statement that it was conditioned on, assuming you will agree to do this. And the fact that he conditioned it makes it, obviously shows that it was material to him. Second of all,
If there had been an abandonment and an acceptance, then why a few days later did he say, we don't have an agreement, we should arbitrate, we should consider arbitrating? There wouldn't have been any point to arbitrating if he'd abandoned it and thought he'd accepted an agreement.
I thought it was Markham that said, let's go to arbitration.
Actually, no, it was Mr. Thomas who first came back with a proposal saying, you know, either agree, we have a private settlement option, or let's go to arbitration. You should agree to arbitration. And Mr. Markman said, fine, let's go to arbitration. To which Mr. Thomas said, okay, I'll look into the details. And then he comes back after he looks into the details and says, oh, I'm not actually interested. After all, we already have an agreement. Last point on that is there was no waiver with respect to the argument that we should have a trial. We obviously opposed the summary judgment. And there's absolutely no basis to argue waiver. We've cited cases that said it's a summary judgment standard. You're entitled to an evidentiary hearing. I think we cited Brinkerhoff for this type of proposal. So for all of the reasons we've cited in our brief and today, we think the judgment should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last case on today's calendar is Falk FRA.